Chapter 7. After the Offer. You have jumped through all of the necessary hoops and emerge with the prize, a job offer. What now? You need to do two things. Number one, decide if this is the right job for you. And number two, decide whether and how to negotiate for more compensation. Even if you are tremendously happy about this offer, eager to accept it and start working, it's a good idea to be thoughtful at this stage. Just think how relieved you will be if you find out something that would have made the job intolerable for you. By declining the job, you may dodge a bullet. But even if you continue to hear nothing but positive things, the reflection and work you've done will have been worthwhile. This period between offer and acceptance is an important window for learning more about the workplace you're potentially joining, for negotiating, and for making an impression. If you are anxious about taking too long to decide, let the person who made the offer know that you'd like to do some more information gathering and thinking. Ask him or her what a reasonable amount of time frame for that would be. Then prepare to surprise the person by letting them know well before the deadline. If they won't nail down a deadline, give yourself 2 weeks, and then try to decide within 5 to 8 business days. If you need more time than you are given, or would like to take, assuming that you have good reasons, explain the reasons and ask for more time. Employers want to know that you are considering carefully and being reasonable. As long as you don't make them think that you are either completely indecisive by nature or holding out in case you get another offer, they will generally want to accommodate you. At the same time, one way to ensure you're in the strongest possible position is to refrain from going overboard at this point. Your future employers are probably pretty excited about you, and you want to convey that you are excited about them too. You can be excited and still want to find out more information. What you should not do at this point is 1. Over-negotiate, or 2. Aggressively interrogate people. Both send a negative message about your interest in the job and potentially your priorities. Number 1. Deciding if this is the right job for you. Even if it feels like this job is perfect, this is a good time to do some more research. People will generally be open to speaking with you at this stage, and any information you obtain will serve you well in your job. Here are ways you can gather information about the organization, the job, and whether it's a good job for you. Reflect. Look over your notes from your communications with members of the organization. Let your notes jog your memory and write down more notes. For example, in the process of the interview, did you get a chance to see a high-ranking person talking with or about a secretary? Did you see peers talking to each other? What did those interactions suggest about the interpersonal dynamics at the organization? Check the job offer against your own needs and desires. Revisit the first 2 chapters of this book. Go through the issues raised and your responses to questions about what you are looking for in a job. See how this current job offer lines up with your values and priorities. In the interview and at other stages of the process, you probably found answers to many of the questions that are important to you. However, you should also identify questions 1, to which you don't have answers, and 2, to which you have 1 or 2 people's opinion, but which are important enough to you that you should consult others. Research the organization. Hopefully, you've already done a significant amount of research, so revisit what you've already done and do a little more. Your perspective will change when you have an offer in hand. Go back to their website. See what has been written about them in periodicals, including general sources like the local newspaper, Newsweek, or legal journals, newsletters, etc. Google the organization and various individuals in it. Ask to meet with people, your peer group and others with whom you'll be working. If the person who held the job before you has been promoted within the organization, it's certainly appropriate to ask that person about the job. If it seems appropriate, you can also ask for contact information for people who have held the job before you if they are not at the organization. If you want to meet again with anyone you spoke with during the interview process, feel free to ask. Whenever you meet with anyone, it's a good idea to ask questions, but also to get them talking. To paraphrase Donald Rumsfeld, remember that you are interested in 2 different categories of unknowns. The known unknowns, that is, what you are aware of you don't know, and the unknown unknowns, the things you don't know but haven't even identified. You can ask questions to find out the former, but you need to do some free-form investigating to find out the latter. One of the best ways to do so is to allow conversation with future colleagues to go in unexpected directions. The other advantage of this approach is that you can avoid the aggressive interrogation pitfall mentioned in the introductory section. It also may be a good idea to take people to a neutral location like a restaurant or a coffee house. Check out the physical and social setting again. This can happen when you go back to meet with people. What does the layout of the space say about the organization's priorities and hierarchy? Is there an open floor plan, or do people keep their doors open? Who has private offices and who doesn't? Do people greet each other? Do they seem to know and like each other? What else do you notice? Talk to people in your network about the position and the organization. After gathering your information, don't be overly put off by a couple of negative reviews of the organization or by information that conflicts in reasonable ways. There are always a couple of unhappy people at any workplace, and there are always slight differences of interpretation or differences in perspective between departments, across ranks, etc. The main indicator of your happiness at a particular job is fit. Although hard to define, fit is about your sense of belonging at an organization and the organization's sense that you are a good match for them. Fit is first based on the extent to which you match the job you have been offered. By the time you have been given an offer, clearly the potential employers see it as a good fit. That doesn't necessarily mean, though, that you see it as a good fit. Will your work involve a combination of activities that seems to be what you want? If you haven't found out by now, it's a good time to get your potential employer to break down for you as clearly as possible the different things you'll be doing. X percent of your time doing one kind of thing, Y percent doing another thing, and so on. Make sure that when you sit down and think about how you'll spend your days and weeks and months, the balance appeals to you. Of course, while you're doing this and every suggestion in this chapter, you should also be realistic. If you are in an entry-level position, there's a decent chance that you will be doing a combination of work that's less desirable than what you eventually hope to be doing. Given the specifics of your particular situation, you need to weigh this job offer against other jobs you may be offered. Fit is also based on whether you're getting along in a firm's culture. If you work at a small firm and everyone but you goes out to happy hour every Wednesday, that will affect your sense of belonging. If you work at a firm where hierarchy is very strictly adhered to, but you're uncomfortable having a secretary you don't consider a friend, that will not be a good fit. You should try to find out as much as possible about the firm's culture before accepting the job. Here are some things you might wish to ask. Some of them overlap somewhat with the issues raised in the first chapter, but don't forget to revisit those issues as well. Number 1. The overall governance structure of the organization. Who makes the decisions? Number 2. How much say will you have, now or over time as you acquire seniority? Number 3. If you haven't attended law school, ask about the organization's support for patent agents who want to get their JD. Can you get reduced hours or other forms of time off? Will they help with tuition? Number 4. Evaluation and promotion structures. For attorneys at a law firm, this includes what the chances are for making partner. What percentage of people up for partner actually made partner over, say, the last 2, 5, or 10 years? How do people in IP or patent law generally do compared to the overall odds? Ask about this whether or not you're an attorney. You may become one, and the odds of making partner affect the feel overall at a firm. It also includes how raises are determined, what kinds of reviews are expected, and similar issues. Are there clear channels of communication, clear standards for success? Who will evaluate you, and on what schedule? Number 5. Billable hours. If your workload is evaluated in terms of billable hours, what is the minimum number? What's average? How does it vary across departments? Make sure you find out what billable hours standards apply to your department or position, because they can vary widely between different parts of an organization. When you talk to individuals in your peer group, ask them how much they billed last year. Sometimes billable hour expectations and realities don't line up at all. Number 6. If your job doesn't use billable hours, find out how much overtime people generally work, and again, check for variations across departments. Number 7. Overtime. What hours do people keep? What time do they leave the office? What time do they get to the office? Although most offices are open during regular working hours, some firms have an unofficial 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. workday, or even a noon to 8 p.m. workday. How often do employees come in on weekends? If they come in a lot on weekends, is it because they need to put in the time, because they need to show their faces so that other people know they're working a lot, or both? Number 8. Finally, don't be afraid to come right out and ask the people you meet how they would describe the workplace culture. Once you have made your decision, notify the employer as soon as possible in a verbal, real-time medium, over the phone or in person, and in writing, hard copy, and/or email. Whether or not you accept the offer, be polite and gracious. Thank the person for the hard work they have put into the search process. It is hard work. If you choose not to accept the offer, keep in mind that the contacts you have made in the process are extremely valuable to you. After all, you have clearly impressed them enough that they wanted to make you their colleague. Explain the reason why you chose not to accept the offer. If the reason is not flattering to the organization, find a way to avoid being critical without being dishonest. Think of it as a breakup that you'd like to keep on cordial terms. Explain yourself in terms that suggest, "It's not you, it's me," without being self-deprecating, or "It's no one's fault, it's just the situation." Number 2. Negotiating better compensation. One of the most important issues job candidates face when handed an offer is whether and how to negotiate for better compensation. Your starting salary is a big deal. Generally, raises are based on a percentage of your salary, so the more you start off with, the more you will add to your salary every year. However, there are also reasons not to push too hard for better compensation. First, some organizations simply don't accommodate negotiation about compensation, whether it's salary, benefits, or time off. They have a pay scale that they stick to. If you push this kind of organization too hard, you're going to come across negatively as someone who has an inflated sense of their own self-worth, as someone to whom money trumps other things of value, as someone who will negotiate everything, always wondering what's in it for me instead of how can I help, and/or as someone who is in it only for themselves and isn't a team player. In the end, you're still not going to get more money. In fact, and this is the second main reason, if you push too hard at any workplace, even one that doesn't have rigid salary scales, people will get one or more of those impressions of you. In those cases, you may get more money, but you may have done yourself more harm than good by burning out their sense of goodwill toward you. The problem is that it's hard to determine whether pay is negotiable, and what constitutes pushing too hard varies enormously from place to place. When you're deciding whether to negotiate for more compensation, you should take several factors into consideration. They are: Number 1. Am I being paid at the rate appropriate to my job title in my geographical area? You can use a calculator at a website like payscale.com to get some sense of the range or averages you can expect. Number 2. Am I being paid at a rate comparable to others in my organization at the same level? Getting access to this information is more difficult. Sometimes organizations make the ranges public. Sometimes the figures are available to employees or employees at a particular rank, and sometimes they're confidential. However, asking what the range is and where you fall may be a good first move in negotiating a higher salary, though it could backfire if you are at the very top of the range for your rank. Number 3. Is the organization where I have been offered a job the kind of place where compensation packages are set according to a rigid pay scale? The kind of place where I can negotiate, or even the kind of place where I'm expected to play hardball at this stage? Again, this may be fairly easy to find out, or it may be virtually impossible. Other than testing the waters by asking for more money or implying that you would like more, the only way to find out may be to talk to people. You can gently inquire about it when you are meeting with people in the post-job offer stage. The best situation in which to ask is if you feel that you have an ally in the hiring process who knows whether you should ask for more money. Sometimes your future supervisor or future colleagues will be on your team about these issues and encourage you to negotiate with HR or the higher-ups. Sometimes they will even raise the topic themselves. Ask casually at first, "So hey, do you think there's any wiggle room in these numbers?" You are more likely to get a false negative than a false positive in such cases. Perhaps it didn't occur to the person you asked that it's possible at this firm, or they're budget conscious and want to discourage you from costing the organization more money, but they're unlikely to encourage you to negotiate if it's inappropriate to do so. Number 4. Am I being paid what I think I am worth? Even if you have looked at all of the relevant statistics and your compensation package is in line with or above the norm, if you perceive yourself to be underpaid, you are going to resent your job. In this case, you can try negotiating, and if that doesn't work, or if your sense of what you want is clearly outside of the negotiable ballpark, you may need to look at a different type of job where the norm is more in line with your expectations. Let's say that, after considering all of these factors, you decide that it is appropriate to negotiate for a higher salary. Or you honestly don't care whether it's appropriate because you wouldn't accept the job unless they offered you a higher salary. You are in the best position to get a higher salary if you can make a strong case for one, other than, I want more money. Another benefit of making a case for a higher salary is that it is much more palatable to the employer if your salary demands have a logic to them, other than greed. Here are some suggestions for arguments you can make. If your salary is below average based on your geographical area, your organization, or your job title nationally, you can make an argument along any of those lines. For example, even if your organization pays less than average for your geographical area, and your starting salary is appropriate for the organization, but low for the area, you can make the case that if you hold out for a different job, you'll make more money. You can also put this argument in terms of future jobs, not current ones. If you are paid on par with the standards of the region, not the organization, you're more likely to stay over the long term. Be gentle here, though. You don't want to talk about leaving before you even accept the job. Saying that more money will improve your long-term satisfaction in this position raises the issue strongly enough. If your salary is at or above average through all of these variables, you can focus on your particular qualifications as a logic for requesting more money. In this case, you would say something like, I see that the average starting salaries for patent attorneys or agents in this area is X dollars, but I think that my PhD or decade of experience in industry or whatever is worth Y dollars, and so I'm wondering if you would consider starting me out at Z dollars, where Z equals X plus Y. You can crunch your personal numbers and make an argument based on what you actually need. If you do this, be prepared to have to share your itemized, but not necessarily detailed, budget with others and defend it. Depending upon your situation, you may also be able to do a modified version of this approach where you consider differences between what you have made in the past, how changing jobs changes your situation, and why you require X amount of money to meet those needs. For example, one job candidate was a single mother who had a child with special needs. Accepting the job offer would require her to relocate to a place where the public schools were inadequate to meet his needs, so she would really need to enroll her child in a private school. She showed her employers her current salary, ran it through a cost-of-living calculator to adjust it for how much it would be worth in the new location, added the expenses of sending her son to private school, and told them that the total was how much she required. Even though the organization's initial offer was quite impressive, they wanted this candidate enough that they matched her amount and added several thousand dollars a year on top of it so that they didn't look stingy. While salary is a good place to seek additional compensation, don't forget about other parts of your overall compensation package. Consider benefits. If the firm charges employees for their own health insurance or for insuring their spouse and/or kids, you could try to get insurance at no cost to you. The same is true of other benefits. You could, for example, ask for a stronger retirement package. You could also ask for more paid vacation time, although that's not a useful approach in firm cultures where people never even use the vacation time they're given. Even in organizations where it's not appropriate to negotiate salary, if you have a logic for requiring additional compensation, you can sometimes negotiate. The key here is to know that these organizations need to maintain the appearance of equality among people of similar rank. What you need to do is find invisible ways to obtain more compensation. One place to look for these invisible compensations is in your benefits package, as described in the previous bulleted item. Another place to consider additional funds is one-time decisions or expenses that others either won't notice or will attribute to something other than your post-offer negotiation. For example, you could ask for a budget for new office furniture, for the firm to pay for a new laptop or other office equipment for you to use at home or while traveling, or a very generous moving allowance, or even a moving allowance in the form of cash if you're not moving. They may have set aside money to pay for moving expenses, and you can see if they'll give you that money. Although there are potentially dozens of places where an employer could find some more compensation for you, you shouldn't raise everything you can think of. Just suggest a couple of areas and see if the employer comes back to you with any other ideas. What will be appropriate in one workplace won't be in another. Finally, if you just want to make sure you're getting as much as you can, there are two tactics you can try. Number one, you can give the person who makes the initial offer the silent treatment. This involves listening to the job offer, writing down all of the information about salary, benefits, and any other compensation, and then simply pausing. If you're in the same room with the person, i.e. not on the phone, make sure you have a look on your face that suggests that the offer isn't high enough. Try to outwait the person. Sometimes they will interpret your silence as hesitancy about the compensation package and spontaneously offer you more. Number two, prepare yourself ahead of time to respond immediately to the salary indicated along with the job offer. Think of it as an immediate counteroffer. When the potential employer makes the offer, sound a little skeptical about the salary figure. You can counteroffer right then with something like, I was really hoping to make something more like X, where X is a round number higher than the initial offer. It's helpful to have one of two figures in mind ahead of time, either a number or a range you really want to aim for, or an amount by which you want to increase whatever offer they make. Maybe $2,000 or $5,000 or $10,000. If you can't counteroffer as soon as the salary figure is stated, say you get too nervous or you can't get a word in edgewise, another approach is to ask the person to restate the salary and benefits package. Appear to mull over the bottom line and then make the counteroffer. Whether or not you choose to negotiate for a higher salary or compensation package in general, and whether or not you are successful in doing so, remember that each job has its own particular set of compensations. In fact, many firms where you stand to make the most money must pay sky-high salaries because they have to compensate for the fact that the jobs are terribly demanding and come at a very high cost of personal and family time, mental and physical health, and other things that comprise quality of life. Remember your values and choices as you laid them out in the first two chapters of this book. Hopefully, as you reach the end of the process outlined in this book, you will find yourself in a job that you love, one that you can commit to over the long term, or one that is a terrific stepping stone to move your career forward. Congratulations! Take some time to reward yourself. As you begin your new job, here is a list of things to keep in mind. Number one, be sure to let the people who helped you through the search process, including your references, people who helped you network, and friends and family, know how the search turned out, and that you are grateful for their support. In some cases, that means sending a formal thank you note. In others, it means taking a moment to express your gratitude explicitly, or it could mean celebrating together. Number two, as you begin the process of assimilating into the organization's culture, make sure that you make listening a priority. While it's important to impress people, one of the best ways you can do so in the long term is to take some time early on to learn as much as you can about how the organization works. Number three, from the beginning, make sure that you are the employee you aspire to be. You are establishing your reputation as someone who is honest, friendly, and dependable in addition to good at what they do. You are also establishing your identity in relation to the organization. The impressions people get of you over the first couple of months will stick with them and be twice as hard to undo as they are to create in the first place. Number four, especially at the beginning, make sure that you are results-oriented. When you accomplish something, make it visible to others. It's important to strike a balance between ensuring that you get credit for what you do and avoiding becoming one of those people who feels compelled to trumpet all of their accomplishments to everyone. Over the long term, it's better to quietly overachieve. However, early on, it's crucial to show that you can produce tangible results. The main audience to impress is your immediate supervisor, so make sure to check in regularly. Number five, be mindful of work-life balance issues. It's important to fit into the workplace culture in terms of how much time you spend at the office or working at home and even checking in, for example, checking your email, but it's also important to set a tone early on about where your boundaries are. Unless you are just fine working whatever overtime you can, or, at the other extreme, your employer is just fine with you working 9 to 5, you are going to have to do a tightrope walk. Pay attention to the hours your peers work. Notice how late they stay and whether and when they come in on weekends. You don't want to be the first or the last person to arrive or leave. At the same time, if you have non-negotiable commitments outside of work, don't start off on the wrong foot by neglecting those commitments. Presumably, you knew about these commitments before you accepted the job, and they are not incompatible with performing well according to your employer's standards. Rather, indicate that you have those commitments, while at the same time demonstrating to your employer that they don't hurt your job performance. Number 6. Don't forget to keep networking, or if it wasn't part of your job search this time around, to begin networking. Don't forget to keep thinking about ways to give back to the people in your network, too. Number 7. Hopefully you like the job you have worked so hard to get, but if you find that you don't, try to stick it out for a year. Too much job hopping raises caution flags for other potential employers. Whether or not you like your current job, keep your ear to the ground about job opportunities and the market in general. It's always useful to have a sense of the state of the field and the job market. Don't be afraid to speak with legal recruiters. They can provide a lot of information, and it's often helpful to establish relationships with them before you're actively searching for a new job. Number 8. Whether or not you asked for or received higher compensation during the period before you accepted your job offer, don't forget that there are other opportunities to ask for a raise. If new information surfaces that indicates that you're good for business in any way, that you're indispensable to the organization, or that you are exceeding expectations, you can indicate that your current salary was based on a certain level of performance that you have clearly surpassed and that you feel that you deserve increased compensation, commensurate with your value to the organization. And of course, any time you are promoted or your duties change is a good opportunity to ask for a raise. Number 9. Don't neglect the big picture. It's easy to get caught up in the day-to-day busyness of your job and get off track about your long-term intentions. Remember the priorities you identified as you began your job search. Check in regularly to make sure that your career and your life are lining up with those priorities. Think about your career path and whether you are where you should be. You might even want to schedule an appointment to do this once or twice a year so that you don't let it slide. After completing this book and following the recommendations contained inside, you should have a strong understanding of what your ideal job is, the requirements it must meet, and the steps you need to take in order to put yourself in the optimal position to get that job. By now, you should have your documents polished and perfected and distributed to your network of mentors, associates, and colleagues who will assist you in your job search. Once you've honed your interview skills, you'll begin to attract jobs and will, hopefully, have several offers to choose from. The decision is yours to make. Use the suggestions in this book to make the decision that is best for you, both now and in the future. May your career in patent law be both a rich and rewarding one.